From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. Today, we are joined by my fellow Coffee with Kenobi blogger, Mike McDonald. In this episode, we are going to discuss the ninth episode of the second season, Future of the Force. This was an outstanding episode written by Bill Wolkoff. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
Very good, Aaron. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to discussing this this fun episode, and fun to get to talk to you for the second time now. So definitely this has been fun getting to know you through this. So let's jump right into it. Future of the Force.
Absolutely.
What did you think of this episode?
I really liked it. One of the best ones I think they've had so far. I'm liking how fun the show is getting. We saw that, I think, starting with the last episode with Stealth Strike. A lot of action, a lot going on, but still a lot of humor. There's a lot of seriousness going on in it, but it was a fun. It really felt like old school Star Wars.
Yes, it did. The last few episodes have felt like that, which has been very nice for me because the originals are my favorite. So, but this was a very fun episode because we got to see some things that a lot of people have been waiting to see. And, of course, we'll go over that, and we could spend a whole bunch of time on just one scene from this episode for all night.
Just oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But we will give the whole episode its fair chance here. So,
well, okay.
Before we jump into that. So, but definitely we start off with a different opening than we get from most Rebels. We start off above a planet with transports coming and going. And of course, focuses in on one particular transport that's departing this unknown planet. They never actually gave us the name. And of course, inside the ship, there's people walking around, passengers, obviously a passenger ship. And it focuses in on this lady who has a newborn wrapped in a blanket. And of course, she's talking to the baby. The baby's a little crying, a little whining, but she's comforting the baby and talking about how they have a new bright future ahead of them at the end of this trip, and that they're going to be all okay. But they're not, because at that point we have the Empire intervening and locking on their tractor beams and pulling the ship in. And of course everybody starts panicking and hiding and boarding the ship once it gets pulled inside the Star Destroyer are our favorite new Inquisitors, the fifth brother and the seventh sister. What did you think seeing them again?
Oh, they're cool. They're cool. I think I like them better than the Grand Inquisitor. I especially like the Seventh Sister. She's just she's evil with multiple E's.
She is. She's got some demeanor around her that just makes her makes your skin crawl at some points.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. They're a great team. And they board the ship, and of course they're stopped by, or tempted to be stopped by, a member of the crew that says, "We're illegal transport. We got clearance to depart." And of course, then the sister says, "We're looking for some valuable cargo you're carrying," and kind of tosses them to the side. And of course, they head straight down the hallway, and that's where they catch the lady with the baby who we met earlier, who was trying to escape.
Which was really creepy, the way she opened the door, and just the way he was kind of toying with her by using the force to close the door back over again. It was just, never really saw that. Really, with a villain using the force before that way.
Exactly.
I was expecting. I mean, I guess we knew she was going to get caught. It just seemed to make it even more ominous that she had an escape route, and then the Inquisitor closed off that escape route, and the whole time she's holding the baby. So it was just additionally creepy.
And the way they wielded the force so easy to close those doors.
Yes.
You would think, of course, with Sidious following the rule of two, you have him and you have Vader. Where are all these, anybody with any force power, of course, are hunting him down. Why would you keep so many around you in service that could turn on you? Because obviously these Inquisitors demonstrated their skill with the saber. They've demonstrated use of the force. They obviously know their way around.
Right.
But it's been made abundantly clear through interviews that they're not Sith. But still, that threat, you would think would still be there if they're being influenced by the dark side.
Right. I wonder if we'll find out that they have some sort of leash on them, something that kind of keeps them subservient, maybe. Because there's a scene later on where the brother he senses the heroes in that building. So yeah, they're exactly. Strong. They know how to use it.
Oh, absolutely. So there's got to be something holding them in check, so they just don't. The dark side craves power. Why not? Go for the brass ring,
right? For sure.
But they go through. They capture the daughter, the ship, and they cut off any escape for that mother and that baby. And they said they just have to tie up some unfinished business before they go about their business. And the brother turns around and he just launches that double-bladed lightsaber down the hallway at everybody that's just kind of peeking out and around the corner at them.
Right.
And, of course, it cuts to the title screen there, but you get the idea of what they were doing at that point.
For sure. And then you notice there was there wasn't any fanfare. It was like an ominous piece of music instead.
Exactly. Kevin Kiner scored her in that point. It was very ominous. It was very dark to get let you know the seriousness of what just happened.
Right.
Because if it had gone into that big upbeat fanfare they normally use, it would have really made a difference.
Right.
Changed the attitude of the story at that point.
Right. Also, it was a bit of a throwback to that scene to in the Clone Wars, where Savage Opress did it to that meeting with the Falleen.
Very true.
I think he took off one head, not a whole ship worth, but
that's
pretty
true.
Much same idea.
General idea, same, yeah.
Right.
So, of course, we come in from that title screen to the ghost sitting in. Of course, it's Docking Bay, which I assume we're still on Garel. It never makes that statement, but that seems to be their go-to base for the moment. So they're on Garel, I'm assuming. And, of course, you see Ahsoka Tano, our long-lost Padawan from Clone Wars, approaching the ghost. And, of course, Ezra is outside the ship with Chopper doing some things, and he sees, of course, Kanan come off the ship, and Kanan greets Ahsoka and talks about how surprised he is to see her. And she said that she's there. She has some Jedi business to discuss. And, of course, Kanan definitely says, Jedi business, that would involve me. And, of course, Ahsoka makes a little remark there that he might be more qualified than she is to handle Jedi business.
Right, which was interesting.
quite interesting because, you know, from what we understand, you know, I haven't read the comics. I haven't had the opportunity yet. But the Kanan comics, of course, go into his growth as a Padawan with his master and everything. And, of course, we know his master was killed while he was still a young Padawan. We get that from the stories we've seen in Rebels. And right. Ahsoka, of course, was the Padawan of Anakin Skywalker. She got a lot of Jedi exposure. Yes, she walked away from the Order when she was a Padawan, but she, being Anakin's Padawan, she was dealing directly with the Jedi Council, which I probably can say Kanan probably did not do that much, if any at all. So I would almost think she would be a little bit more qualified.
Yeah, it was an interesting comment for sure. I wonder if it's maybe nothing more than just because she's, well, until we see later on in the episode, but maybe she's more undercover. Maybe she's more behind the scenes. So if there's business like that to be conducted, it's not going to come from her.
You think that very well could be,
you know, because what we see at the end of the episode, point. Certainly, you know, by the indication of this scene, it's just, well, here's your orders. We'll see you later. And then we see what happens at the end of the episode to change that. So,
oh, absolutely.
I wonder if it's so that
very well could have been the case at that point. One of those things I don't know if we'll ever know, but good to speculate on. Right. So, yeah. Of course, Kanan and Ahsoka go to his quarters to have their conversation. And while they are there, they begin talking, and of course Ahsoka says she's been trying to track the Sith Lord. Of course, we all know it's Vader, and hasn't been able to get much information on him at all. But she has gotten some information about the Inquisitors. And apparently, from what she says, the Inquisitors have, you know, a secondary mission besides hunting down Jedi. They are to make retrievals, but nobody knows what they retrieve. But in her investigating, she intercepted and decoded two sets of coordinates. And of course, Ahsoka says, I'm going to go check out these coordinates. And of course, Kanan volunteers to go to the next set. And of course, they agree. And Ahsoka wants Kanan to take Ezra and to bring Ezra into the conversation so they can get him involved as well. And of course, this is where a little bit of comic relief comes in at this point, because Kanan's like, he's already well aware of the mission. And what happens next? The door opens and Ezra falls flat on his face.
It was a great little touch.
Absolutely, it really was.
The thing I like, well, we see it a few more times in this episode, is I haven't been really big on the Master Padawan kind of conversations that the two of them have had. They seemed a little too, I don't know, a little too formal for how informal they are. So this was neat. A little bit looser, a little less about teaching and just, yeah, we know each other. Yeah. You know, instead of Kanan getting all serious, it was just, look, this is how we do things, and don't worry, I know where he is right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm enjoying that aspect of it. It's a little bit, it's easier to take, I think.
Yeah.
Makes the show funner rather than it does.
It adds some real life to it. It's not as strict and orderly as we would see in the Clone Wars or even in the movies and the prequels, where everything was in order by order and everybody, especially the Jedi, reacted and acted a certain way. This is a little more loosey-goosey type, right. I guess you could say.
Right.
So.
Which maybe Obi-Wan would say they're undisciplined.
he could probably say that. Probably. I can hear him saying that. Oh, Anakin.
Ezra. It works though. You know, if you think of Attack of the Clones, the beginning, when they're Anakin and Obi-Wan are riding up on the elevator and they're having the little joke about the, you know, the, no, it wasn't Gundarks. What was it? No. Yeah, it was the Gundarks, yeah. Right? Right. I think so. Yeah. And it's, you know, Obi-Wan's got that, you know, that fake little laugh. Oh, and you compare that to these two, and this is such a looser sort of relationship, which, you know, has a lot more to do with their background and, you know, this time in the timeline where it's not such a formal time, but it's I enjoy it better. I like what's going on with that.
Oh yeah, same here. And they've really are starting to build more on their relationship, and I'm enjoying that. And of course, Ezra of course picks himself up. He's like, I heard she said Jedi business, and I'm a Jedi. So they smile and go about it. And of course, Ahsoka also says she wants them to take Zeb with them, because Zeb has proven himself in the past against the Inquisitors. So they go to, from this scene, they go to the Phantom, where the Phantom, the little shuttle, is landing on the planet Takabo. Takabo, of course, is where they are, their coordinates led them to. And Ezra, Kanan, Zeb, and Chopper, because of course they have to take Chopper. Chopper go with them. They get off the ship, and they head out and have Chopper link up into one of the little computer terminals to find out exactly where they're heading. And they find out that they are heading toward housing units. And of course, this confused Ezra a little bit, why the Inquisitors would be looking for housing units. And of course, Kanan makes some quick, snippy remark about, I don't think they're trying to rent one. which I enjoyed. Kanan's a little smart alecky at times.
Right.
I like it. Unlike some of the other Jedi we've seen in the past.
For sure. For sure.
Well, at this point, they decide they're going to split up. So Zeb and Chopper are given the assignment to locate any Inquisitors and see if they're around. And if they, not necessarily locate, but just keep an eye out for Inquisitors. And, of course, while Kanan and Ezra head to these housing units to find out exactly what they're looking for, because they still don't know. Even Ahsoka wasn't sure for them. So they split up and go their own ways, and we cut to Ahsoka flying an A-wing.
Oh, great shot of an A-wing.
Oh, I tell you, those things are pretty. Never saw enough of them in Return of the Jedi, and now we're seeing quite a bit of them, and it's been worth the wait. I like their paint jobs on this. In Return of the Jedi, they were painted silver and red. Now they're got a lot of blue in it, and I like
that. Yeah.
And I'm noticing a lot of the Rebel ships right now are blue, if you've noticed.
Right.
So they head in with, she's flying around in the A-Wing and arrives at the planet where we saw at the beginning of the show. And of course, as she comes out of hyperspace and approaches the planet, she finds that transport ship adrift in space. So of course, you know, her Jedi instincts are kicking in. She knows that's where she's going. So she circles it, then docks, and then it cuts into a very ominous search of the ship.
Including a tilted camera angle as she's coming through the doorway.
Exactly. They really played this up right in the production on this one, because they had that tilted angle. They had almost like the ship was on half power.
Right.
The lights were dimmed, and she's kind of walking cautiously down the hallway through that. She comes through the door that the Inquisitors came through at the beginning, and just kind of cautiously making her way down the door, down the hallway, and nothing's there. There's showing different angles from different doorways, and there's nothing there. And she just keeps looking, and sees the scarring on the wall from where the lightsabers came flying through that the brother had tossed. And she just kind of gently rubs her hands in the scarring.
Yeah, another great bit as far as the animation goes. It's so realistic. Her hand movement, she just slightly lingers at the very end of that wall. Yeah, really nice. Really nice. As if she's studying it, maybe to see whose blade it is.
Or even that it's bringing back a memory.
Right.
Once she walked away from the order, we never know what happened to her.
That's right.
When it's very, very, very possible that when she heard what was happening on with Order 66, she may have worked her way back to the temple to see what was going on and had seen those scarred walls.
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, for sure.
And that could have impacted her. That would be something that would impact you greatly. Right. And definitely seeing that again would bring back those haunted memories. But we don't know. We don't know what happened to her from the time she walked away to the time she appeared on The Ghost at the end of the first season.
Right. Well, it's cool because it's basically 2 seconds of screen time, and it deepens her story.
Exactly.
You know,
it makes you want, and that 2 seconds tells a story in and of itself.
Right.
And that's one thing Dave Filoni and this cast and crew are phenomenal at doing. They could take 2 seconds of nothing, where there's not a word being spoken, nothing, and just make it into something so deep that it'll keep people like us talking for hours about and speculating. So who knows?
It's very efficient. It's, you know, it's instead of having, you know, a monologue of some sort, it's very efficient.
Exactly.
Just in a couple seconds. So especially since we've, you know, seen her you know, she's coming and going in these episodes. She's not in every one of them.
Exactly.
So it's giving you a little bit of background, without really knowing what that background means.
Absolutely. So, and of course it's a huge thing. And her, you know, as you mentioned, her hand just lingers there for a second there at the end. And as it pulls away, she hears somebody calling for help. And she runs down to the end of the hallway and she's like, "I'm here to help you." And it's the lady we saw at the beginning of the episode who had the baby. And of course she is laying there. She's pale. Obviously she's been through some trauma. Soka's trying to comfort her and let her know, "Hey, I'm here to help you. Don't worry." And that's when she goes, they've taken her. She's gone. They've taken her.
Right. The Red Blades. We hear that again.
She yes, exactly. Yeah. She says the Red Blades took her. And of course, Red Blades referring to the Inquisitors.
I wonder how well known the Inquisitors are to sort of the general public. Like, is that just simply a way to describe them, or is that sort of a nickname for them that people are using?
Exactly. Well, obviously they're well known enough to have a nickname.
Right.
I'm sure they're probably about as well known as Vader, to a certain extent. Vader was known as Sidious's enforcer and the Emperor's enforcer. So these obviously had that same reputation going forward. So definitely I'm not surprised they had a nickname. They probably have several others, but probably just aren't suitable for air. So she's trying to figure, Soka's like, "What did they take?" And they're like, she's like, my grandchild, she has it. She has it. That's why they took her. And of course, Ahsoka's got this look on her face as it then turns and cuts back to to Chopper and Zeb back on Takabo. And where they are just walking down the street, having a chit chat, keeping an eye out for Inquisitors. And of course, while they're talking, Chopper stops and opens a bay door. And what do we find?
Those awesome Inquisitor ships, the TIE Advanced, I guess.
Yes, those Advanced TIEs, TIE Advanced. Yeah. Very nice ships.
There's a great shot as soon as the door opens that shows them, and it's almost like it's eyeballs staring back.
Oh, exactly.
At the camera, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the door opens, Zeb looks in, and he's like, "Oh, Karabast." That's becoming everybody's favorite word around Rebels, apparently.
Yeah.
So, of course, he radios Kanan that they found the ships to give them a heads up. But they go in. Of course, he's not going to let them have their ships. He's going to destroy them. So as they go in to sneak up on the ships to make sure nobody is there, of course, they're being cautious, sneaking around. Zeb and Chopper are. They get up next to one of the cockpits, and they hear a baby crying. Unusual for a TIE fighter, but they peek in through the port, and they look in through the front cockpit window, and there is the baby from the ship Ahsoka's currently on that they had taken, just lying in the cockpit of this TIE fighter.
No car seat.
No car seat.
Awful,
you know how
awful
many galactic seat laws they just broke doing that?
Okay. Makes you wonder. I mean, you have to take off in that thing.
Exactly.
They should contain it somehow.
You would think they would. Yes. Or maybe they're just strong enough with the force while they're flying it. They got it just suspended in midair above it.
Oh.
Who knows? But so they decide they're going to, of course, destroy the ships. But Zeb is insistent that they save the baby first, which gives me the impression Chopper wasn't too keen on saving the baby. But they save the baby, get the baby out, and of course plant some explosives in the TIEs, and of course radio ahead to Kanan that they're heading back to the ship because they have a baby. And of course Kanan and Ezra are at the apartment building, and they are going through the building, and they come to one certain apartment. They open the door, and everything is destroyed. It's flipped over. The place has obviously been ransacked. And they go in, and they find... one of classic Kenner throwbacks, one of our hammerheads.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. We have a hammerhead.
Blue onesie and all.
Exactly. So they go in, and of course, they help the hammerhead mother up. And she's telling them what had happened and that the Red Blades had come again, tried to take her child. And they're like, "Your child?" But they didn't. And she's like, "Yes, but they didn't get him. I had sent him out with the in a basket with a droid." So of course Ezra promises to get the baby back and make sure they're okay, and Kanan tells her to go to their docking bay and wait for him there, because he's going to make sure that she's safe. And they radio Zeb, who is already back at the Phantom with the baby, and tells him that they were looking for a baby and that it's inside a basket with a droid. And he's, of course, Zeb is shocked that they're looking for another baby because he already has one. So he takes off to help him look for it. And he doesn't get that far away from the docking bay when he finds this droid with the basket and the baby inside. And it's a hammerhead baby, of course. So, of course, he convinces the droid that the mother had sent him. And he takes the baby from the basket. And he goes to take it back to the bay when all of a sudden he hears some commotion behind him. He turns around and looks. And, of course, there are our two favorite Inquisitors who had just found the droid with an empty basket. And, of course, they cut him to shreds. They were not happy that droid did not have the baby they wanted.
And I'm skimming through the episode as we're talking about it, the video. And okay. That's 9 minutes in. And I think we find that the episode doesn't slow down till the credits.
No, it doesn't. From this point on, it is 90 to nothing, straight through to the end.
Yeah.
And definitely they did this on purpose, because it was a fast moving episode from this point on. Because from here, Zeb sees Inquisitors. He says something, takes off running, and all of a sudden the Inquisitors see him. Because they hear the baby crying, they turn around, see Zeb with the baby, and they take off after him. And of course, Zeb's running as fast as he can, carrying the baby, pulls out his comm, tells Kanan that he's got the baby, and he's got some followers. So Kanan knows what that means, so him and Ezra take off to find him. And Ezra's like, "I'll be in this building," and he ducks in a apartment building and to hide and try to lose the Inquisitors till Kanan and them get there. So we have the sister, of course, and the brother walk up to the building. They know he's in there. They hear the baby still crying. And this is where it gets interesting, because the sister launches one of her little probe droids and tells it to watch the outside of the building and essentially watch their backs. So that probe droid hangs around outside while the Inquisitors make entry into the building. And a few seconds later, Kanan and Ezra come running around the corner. And, of course, Kanan grabs Ezra and yanks him to the side because they see the droid.
Right. This whole bit, too, where they wait for their moment to to elude the parrot droid is, like I was saying earlier, about their relationship. You know, no dialogue, no teaching. It's just he kind of puts a hand on Kanan puts a hand on Ezra's shoulder to stop him from making a mistake, from showing where they are.
Exactly.
Just, you know, gives him a glance and it's like, okay, let's go. And it's just, you see them, they're working much more as a team, obviously.
Oh yeah. There's a lot more efficiency in how they work together. There's
right.
a lot less spoken word. They can tell each other what they want from glances more and more as each episode goes on. And we're seeing that a lot in this episode, with them just giving those one looks or one word orders to, as we'll see as the episode progresses, because they, once the droid turns its back and floats back up in the air, Ezra and Kanan rush into the building to help Zeb.
Hey, it's Dan Z
and Corey Club
from Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes. You've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
So Kanan and Ezra, of course, they've entered the building now, and they're searching for Zeb, going floor by floor, hallway by hallway, trying to avoid Inquisitors while they're doing that. And, of course, Zeb pokes his head out of a door and ushers them in to a room where he has the hammerhead baby just laying there on a couch. And he's telling them that, hey, you got to get going. The Inquisitors are here. Ezra goes over to the baby and starts talking to it and, of course, makes the baby cry. Of course, that makes Zeb angry because he had just gotten it quiet. So while they're sitting there discussing things, and Kanan's like, dude, we got to keep quiet. The Inquisitors are around. We don't need them to find us. You see Kanan get hit by just the Force comes over him and he feels it. Feels something's about to happen. He yells, Zeb, look out. Next thing you know, you have a lightsaber coming through the floor. You have another lightsaber coming through the front door.
Great.
Obviously, they are surrounded at this point. What is a Jedi to do when they are surrounded from the bottom and the only door to the room? You make a new door.
Cut the floor. Cut the ceiling.
The ceiling in this case. Kanan and Ezra jump up on the table, use their lightsabers. They cut a big old hole in the roof. And, of course, they force jump through there. And Zeb pulls himself up and through. And, of course, I have some questions about how he does that, though. You see in that scene where that edge of that floor is just glowing hot. Just more and more they just cut it from the lightsaber, and right. He's just grabbing it like it's nothing and pulling himself up. So is it really not hot? Does he have a high pain tolerance? Does he have no feeling in his hand at all? What's the deal in that situation?
Not afterwards, I would think.
Not afterwards, that's for sure. But yeah, he just grabbed that like it was nothing, pulled himself up. Of course, Zeb decides to leave the Inquisitor some present as he drops a thermal detonator down the hole into the room they just left. And they all take off running out the door of the apartment they cut themselves into to try and take off to escape. And for some reason, Zeb stops, turns around and looks, and out rolls his little thermal detonator he just threw down the hole. They had tossed it back up.
I got such a kick out of that. I'm watching it. And I'm thinking, well, no, that always works.
Exactly.
It doesn't come out. Then we get away, you know. So to see that pop out like that instantly was a great little surprise.
Oh, yeah. And the look on his face was priceless because he immediately turned. And he's like, oh, no. And took off running as fast as he could and barely makes it around the corner as the thing explodes in the hallway.
And I think what it also did, too, is, you know, the Rebels haven't had a whole lot of losses. And to have that little thing happen, you go from, well, we might be safe for a minute or two. You go from that to, oh, well, that didn't work. We're still in trouble. It really revved up the tension, I thought.
Oh, exactly. And that brings up an interesting point. They haven't had many losses throughout the series.
Right.
Obviously, we know from the original trilogy, the Rebels did have quite a few losses. I mean, look at Empire Strikes Back. They lost. They got destroyed on Hoth. They got tore up on Hoth. Luke. Well,
even in A New Hope, it starts with Rebels going down.
Exactly.
I think there's been not a criticism, because we know you can't just start killing off the cast. But I think one thing that changed with the Inquisitors. Spoiler, everybody survives again, but the way it started with that brutal attack on the ship, that you get the sense that, okay, fine, you know, the team's going to make it through again, but you know, things are getting ramped up.
Oh yeah.
So showing that they're more dangerous.
Oh yeah. There are more dangerous and that there are casualties,
right?
Just not happening to our crew. But at what point is our crew going to start feeling these losses?
Right.
It's one thing. It's one thing to know people are dying, and there are people hurting. But it's another thing when it's somebody you know,
right?
Somebody you're close to, somebody that you work with. Like when they lost Han at the end of Empire Strikes Back, because he was frozen in carbonite. Luke lost his hand.
Right.
The fleet had barely escaped Hoth. It was some huge setbacks for the Rebels that everybody felt and everybody had a connection with, which just deepened the story. At what point is that going to happen here?
Right.
Because you know it's going to have to eventually. Anyway, back to our episode.
All that from a thermal detonator.
All that from a thermal detonator. Can you believe
that's
that?
Star Wars.
Absolutely. So they all take off running after the detonator explodes and get to a stairwell and start running up some stairs. They get to a floor and Kanan's like, stop, keep your... He's like, tells Ezra, who's carrying the baby, keep your communicator open. And he splits off from him and runs down a hallway while they keep going upstairs. While Zeb and Ezra and the baby keep going upstairs. A few moments later, here come the Inquisitors up the stairs. And the sister turns to keep going up the stairs. And the brother stops and stares down the hallway. And, of course, they have a discussion about who's right, who's wrong. Because he wants to go down the hallway. She wants to go upstairs. And, obviously, in the past, he has made some mistakes because she points that out. But agrees to allow him to take them down the hallway. And he follows the sound of the hallway, and they hear the baby crying, and they get closer and closer, and the door opens, and it's just a communicator lying there with the channel that's open. And, of course, he is furious at this point because he just was tricked. Of course, his sister laughs. He steps on the communicator, breaks it, destroys it, or picks it up and destroys it, excuse me. And then, of course, off they go. Of course, Kanan meets up with them upstairs with Ezra and Zeb, and they realize that they are out of space. They are on the top floor. They have nowhere to go. Kanan's like, you know, there is somewhere to go. We got to get the baby out of here. You're going to take it in the air vents. And Ezra's like, I can't take the baby in the air vents. They'll hear it. They'll listen to it. It's crying. It's terrified. It's not going to be quiet. They'll know where we are before we do. And that's when it hits Kanan. And Kanan's like, no, it senses your fear. That's why it's crying. You need to calm it down. He goes, what do you mean it senses my fear? And Kanan's like, I don't know why I didn't see this before. He's a force-sensitive child. He senses your feelings, and that's what's scaring him, because you're scared. So you have to calm yourself to calm the baby. So then they throw Ezra and the baby up in the vent, and they take off. So we follow Ezra crawling around with the baby, which it would be kind of hard to crawl through an air vent while trying.
Absolutely.
carrying.
You know what? If Ezra ever gets a growth spurt, they're going to need another tactic.
Maybe they find Short Round from Indiana Jones or something. So, exactly. If he gets any taller, he ain't going to fit in those small places.
That's right.
So maybe they can use the baby hammerhead. Yeah, maybe this is a recruiting mission for him.
That's right. He is force sensitive. So.
Exactly. He starts his own little Jedi Academy. Way off topic there. So they're crawling through, and of course the Inquisitors are walking through a hallway, and the brother just stops, closes his eyes, and you can see him reaching out. You can tell he's just reaching out through the Force, and all of a sudden his eyes jerk open. He wields his lightsaber and he just shoves it through the roof, and it's right behind Ezra. And Ezra turns around and he sees the saber come up, and he just sees it just punching through at different spots, getting closer and closer. And the baby is screaming, and he hits a corner where he can't go. And he just grabs the baby, puts its hand on his chest, closes his eyes, and begins to focus in through the Force. It's okay. Calm down. And the baby quiets down. And right before the Inquisitor can strike again, Kanan calls and gets their attention.
Another great little surprise there. The saber just keeps coming and coming and coming.
Oh, absolutely.
And in the ducks like that, it was almost reminded me a lot of the original Alien movie, where you're just claustrophobic, no way out. A unique way of showing a situation where there's no way out.
Absolutely.
And then he calms the baby down, and you've got that nice little sound effect, little bit of music there. Then Kanan takes over.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, he gets their attention. They turn around. And, of course, they know exactly who he is. The sister looks at him and goes, "Kanan Jarrus, you've finally come out of hiding." So, of course, that's when the sabers ignite. And, of course, the fighting begins. And the sister versus Kanan. Of course, it's a little husband and wife rivalry there, as Freddie Prinze Jr.'s wife, is the sister. So they're going at each other pretty well. And of course, Zed ducks past them to take on the brother. And of course, their fighting ensues as Ezra makes his way through the rest of the ducks and out the front door of the building with the hammerhead baby intact, who of course is calm and relaxed at this point. Ezra's talking to him about how he's safe now, and maybe one day he could come visit him on Gorel. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Come visit me on Gorel. And of course, they walk out of view. And of course, then in another twist to the show comes down our probe droid.
Right.
Looking right at them.
And you've just got every time they seem to be safe, something else happens. Just when you thought, okay, he's outside, they're both calm, let's get out of here, and they walk away. And by having that paradroid pop down, you know it's overheard something. Oh, and now again, you can't relax again, because now what's going to happen? That's got to come back later on.
Oh, exactly. That's going to come into play, I'm sure, shortly. Because from here, of course, Ezra's taken off to get back to the Phantom. We cut back upstairs to where our heroes are fighting, and it's not going well for Kanan and Zeb, to the point that Zeb decides we need another strategy. So he tells Kanan, he goes, "This isn't working. We need another strategy." So he picks Kanan up underneath his arm and takes off running. Not to say Kanan was too pleased with that. The look on his face was very distraught there. he did not look comfortable at all.
Zeb doing what he does best.
Exactly. He's being the muscle. He has got Kanan under his arm, and they're running. And, of course, they're running out of space quickly. They round a corner, and the only thing in front of them is a big window. So as they're running, Kanan pulls his blaster out, blasts through the window. And Zeb tells him he hopes he knows what he's doing as he tosses them outside the window. And Zeb jumps after him. And they land in a speeder, of all things. And Zeb is tickled to death. He lets out a laugh that just is is quite wonderful, actually.
It's, yeah, one of the best scenes, I think, so far in the whole series, really. It was just, and the best thing about it is you've got him just killing himself, loving life. And he says, "How did you know?" And Kanan, "I didn't know." So you've got that whole, you know, we don't know how this is going to turn out. They don't know how it's going to turn out. Just a fun little bit. And again, you know, we're talking about how ominous and tense the episode is. And here's your next little few second break where you can kind of collect yourself. I also liked it was, as the scene goes on, it's, I think the idea maybe was sort of a throwback to the speeder chase in Attack of the Clones with Zam Wessel.
Oh yeah,
but because they're not, that was more above Coruscant, whereas this is right down in the streets. It really felt more like a throwback to the trench run from the original Star Wars.
Yeah, it was a nice combination of both of those scenes, honestly.
Right,
because it was very, you have the additional traffic like you did in Attack of the Clones, the lightsaber wielding, the jumping around, and then you have the tight spaced areas like you had in the trench run. You had that limited space to make movements.
Right. There's one great scene where the hero speeder's coming around the corner, and the speeder dips down in front of the camera. Zeb opens his eyes wide, and then they're followed by the Inquisitors right behind. And it's so cinematic. It's so not a cartoon at this point.
Oh yeah,
I mean, just fantastic.
Oh yeah, they do so much cinema. I'm getting tongue tied now. they do so much in these episodes. To make it feel like a movie.
Absolutely.
Rather than a cartoon.
Right.
And it shows. And this is one of those scenes. Because even as they're escaping in their speeder, the Inquisitors are standing at the window watching them fly away. And, of course, the sister radios for help. She advises the Imperials to close the port and to send backup as they commandeer their own speeder and take off after them, with the sister driving and the brother just standing on top with his lightsabers wielded. And they are flying through the city, trying to escape and trying to chase them down. And, of course, Kanan is in the back seat shooting at the Inquisitors while the brother is blocking his shots. And Kanan eventually gets a nice hit on their speeder, on the Inquisitor's speeder, and sends them spiraling toward the ground. And, of course, as the ship's about to impact, the brother tosses his lightsaber in perfect motion and actually cuts apart the speeder that Zeb and Kanan are traveling in. And, of course, they come in for another stellar crash landing. A lot of crash landings in these Rebels episodes, don't you think? For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of insurance claims in this episode, for sure.
I know.
If you look at the speeders that they're driving too, the heroes are in a light blue open top convertible, I guess we want to call it. If you look at the one that the Inquisitors are in now, I'm forgetting they stole that as well.
I'm pretty sure they would have stole that. I don't think they were traveling around in it.
Now we've seen the style
shows it actually.
Yeah, we've seen the style way back on in Mos Eisley. Right before the yep. Cantina scene back in the original Star Wars, but it looks like them. It's black and gray. It's covered rather than open top, and they might as well have called it down from their ship or whatever, because it just suits them. So you've got that as opposed to the sort of the open light blue of the other one. It's another great little detail.
Oh yeah, exactly. So they are. It's a great detail on those speeders. And definitely, you're right. I remember seeing those especially their type speeder in Mos Eisley,
right,
in A New Hope. Because when they crash, they get out of that thing and they take off after the Rebels. They want them bad, real bad at this point. And Kanan and Zeb see them coming. Of course, they jumped out of their crash speeder and they take off running to get to back to the spaceport because they need to get the Phantom and go. Well, it cuts to the spaceport where where the Phantom is parked, and Ezra is there with Baby Hammerhead. He gets to the door, tries to open it. It's locked. It's sealed. It will not open. So he pulls out his communicator and he tries to call Chopper. Fortunately, no response. So he calls Kanan. He goes, Kanan, the spaceport's locked. I can't get in. And all of a sudden he hears Kanan yelling from behind him, we got some problems of our own. And he turns around and he sees the Inquisitors right behind him. Of course, they have nowhere to go at this point because the doors are sealed. So Kanan and Zeb turn around to face the Inquisitors again. And of course, the Inquisitors slow their approach, start walking up. Zeb goes to attack, and of course, he gets force pushed back and he gets knocked unconscious, which leaves Kanan versus the sister and the brother, 2-on-1.
And what a great set. Can we call them sets in cartoons? Oh, yeah. You know, it's not Imperial gray. It's not, it's this completely different little bit of color. You've got the lights from the surrounding buildings, and it's just, just another unique setting.
Oh, yeah.
And those sabers just look awesome, especially with three of them going at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Two double blades and Kanan's saber all going at once. And definitely Kanan holds his own for a little bit, but eventually he gets beaten. And of course, he gets knocked out and lands next to Zeb, and they're both out cold. And it's just the two Inquisitors and Ezra and the Hammerhead baby at this point. And of course, this is where you see the confidence of Ezra step up, because at this point, he knows he's the only thing left to protect this baby.
It's interesting, I think, that you almost would expect a cutaway shot to Ezra, maybe looking shocked. But instead, Kanan, falls pretty much at his feet. They pan up and he's Ezra's go time. He's got a grimace, the saber's out, and he's ready to take it on. So he's definitely not the same kid we met two seasons ago, season and a half ago.
Oh, exactly. Because with a baby in one hand, he pulls out his saber, he ignites it, steps up between Kanan and Ezra, so he's between them and the Inquisitors, points it right at him. He is ready for a fight. He's going to go down and try it, at least. And, of course, the sister's not impressed. She says, we don't have time to waste on this child. And, of course, force pushes him, and they go flying back into the ground, but not knocked out. Ezra's starting to pull himself up, lift himself up off the ground when the spaceport doors open. And this bright white light comes shining mm-hmm. through, and a score from the heavens begins to play as the outline of Ahsoka Tano comes walking through the door.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not little girl Ahsoka that we know from the Clone Wars. It is not the mysterious rebel liaison we've seen through the episodes of Rebels. This is, I would definitely have to say, a different Ahsoka.
Absolutely.
At this point. And because she has now realized what's going on. And she steps through, stands there confidently. You get this beautiful pulled back shot of everything. Just this wide pan shot with the Inquisitors on one side, Zeb and Kanan on the ground in the middle with Ezra there, and Ahsoka just standing straight and tall and confident, that showing a level of confidence and maturity we had never seen before. Not in Clone Wars, not in Rebels. She knew what she was there to do, and she was confident about it. And of course, at this point, she whips out her two lightsabers, holds them in typical Ahsoka fashion, one in front, one behind, all upside down, ready for her fight.
I'm sorry. And it's great, too, how after seeing the white, whatever, that backlit white light that she walked through, and then you see that same color condensed down into her saber. It's just
exactly. Just
a beautiful, beautiful couple shots there.
Oh, phenomenal shots. Because it tells a story in and of itself. She's not a Jedi, but she is a Jedi.
Right.
Is she? what exactly is she if she's not a Jedi?
Well, what I like is it's there's so much light involved with that. Is she still a source of
good
of light, the mm-hmm. source of good?
Oh yeah, she's still a source of good. And the symbolism and the bright light coming through the door of the white and her sabers symbolizes that good that she still stands for, that she stood for during the Clone Wars, even though she didn't have white sabers. She has her want for good has not changed. So she's standing there. She's got the sabers in her hand. She's looking at them, and she looks down at Ezra and says, "Get the youngling inside." Not the baby. She calls it a youngling, which tells us she knows that's a Force-sensitive child.
Right.
So then she looks down, and she gives him a wink. Just that one simple wink, which basically is telling Ezra, "I got this. Go."
I think that'll be the next GIF added to the Star Wars app.
Oh, absolutely!
It's her making that wink. She looks, you know, apart from the design, she just looks nothing like Ahsoka that we knew. Just nothing's the same about her stance or look. That wink was just okay.
Yeah.
We're 15 years later. This is going to be different now.
Oh, absolutely! It's exactly what it was. Almost like they were letting us know, hey, she's got this.
Right.
So, because as soon as she winks, she looks up and she goes airborne. Airborne, she flies over Ezra, over Kanan, over Zeb, who are laying all there unconscious, and comes full sabers down on the sister. And the battle of the century ensues. To date, I have to say, for the animated shows, this is my favorite saber battle.
Yes, definitely.
Because there is no holds barred from Ahsoka. She is taking them on and pushing them to the limits and just letting them have it. And they're surprised, too. I think that the sister and the brother are actually a little surprised, because when she first came out and activated her sabers, they looked at her and they were like, "This is a surprise." But
well, the sister went so far as to open her mask up.
Oh, absolutely.
You get that great little bit of, it almost sounds like a blade opening as it opened up, but she's got a look on her face like, oh, well, okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
See where this goes.
And obviously she learns from her that mistake, because Ahsoka takes it to him. So Ezra sees Ahsoka going into combat, so he gets himself up, runs up to Zeb and Kanan. He's like, "Get up, we gotta go. And Kanan gets to his feet and he sees Ahsoka fight. He turns to look at Ezra and goes, "Well, what about Ahsoka?" And about that time the brother lands unconscious at his feet, and Kanan goes, and Ezra's like, "I think she's got it."
So right.
They take off running toward the ghost, or not the ghost, but toward the Phantom. And the battle continues to ensue. And they're going back and forth. And then Ahsoka does something a little surprising. She, with the sister knocked back, she puts her arms out to her side, deactivates her lightsabers, and drops to her knees. Very unlike anything we had seen her do in the past, any of her past saber attacks in Clone Wars, unlike anything we have ever seen. And the only time we've seen anything like it's in A New Hope, when Obi-Wan knows Luke's watching and he lifts up his saber
right.
and lets Vader cut him down.
When we've spoke before about this, and I was thinking it was strictly sort of a luring tactic, as if she had enough you know, she was smart enough to be able to do what's going to happen next. But I wonder now if, because she takes that position, closes her eyes, and she's focusing, if what we're going to see next, where she grabs the sister's sabers, if it was sort of a mustering up.
Very good. Yeah.
Because this, you know, the sabers are back on her belt. So she has no intentions of pulling them out again, I would think, because of that. And she just it, kind of like Qui-Gon. In Phantom Menace,
meditating, yeah.
Yeah, you know, where it's sort of summoning.
Oh, yeah. It's very good. Very good. I hadn't thought about that, but that's definitely.
Yeah, you want, because it's, you know, it's very deliberate. And you just, I mean, and it's such, it's, we've never seen that. A Jedi's never done. The closest we've seen to something like that. Now, who was it? It was, the shut off a saber. Oh, it was back in the Clone Wars. Oh, I'm thinking of the Mortis trilogy when the father put his hand on the blade and pushed it down. Yeah, which is a little Anakin, little more extreme. Yeah, but to just put away the weapon of a Jedi and then she calls on something. I just
in the middle outstanding. Of
what a cool way of approaching it. Yeah.
So, of course, as you mentioned, she deactivates those sabers, and of course, the sister lunges at the opportunity. Her guard is she thinks her guard is down. She lunges at Ahsoka with her ignited saber, and Ahsoka catches her. She has got the hands. Her hands are on top of the sister's hands, holding that saber and pushing her back. And the saber shuts down, and a look of sheer fear and panic just crosses the seventh sister's face.
Right. We've never seen her that wide-eyed before.
No, we haven't. Grant, we haven't seen a lot of her, but nothing we've seen would ever give us the indication that she has faced this kind of beating before. Right. Even when she was defeated the first time, she still was confident in her abilities. This was a sheer panic. Like, what is going on here? What is this? Who is this? What is she doing? And of course, Ahsoka stands up to her feet, tosses the saber of the sister aside, and then force pushes her into a pillar, and where she just collapses and just lies there. And of course, at this point, Ahsoka pulls out her lightsaber, one of the white sabers, points it at her, and tells her, "You are beat." And of course, then we get a familiar sound of troop transport speeding down the road, and they, of course, surround Ahsoka, and of course, stormtroopers are pouring out of them. And of course, the sister begins to laugh and goes, "No, you are beaten." Of course, about that time, she calls her saber back, and of course, Ahsoka has to flip back to avoid it, and she kind of holds back, and Ahsoka's kind of holding back, watching, seeing what the situation is, trying to figure out what she's going to do. And the sister, of course, stands there next to the brother and says, "Your capture will please Lord Vader." But about that time, they hear the Phantom, and the Phantom comes up out of the space port and goes flying overhead. And Ahsoka smiles and says, "Your master will have to wait." And then, of course, she runs and jumps and does all these wonderful Jedi flips and jumps and winds up getting into the Phantom as it flies away. And, of course, they make their big escape. And all the Inquisitor Sewers just stand there and watch them. So they fly off. And, of course, as they're in the ship flying away, Ahsoka's at the front with Kanan. In the back, we have the Hammerhead Mom reunited with its baby. We have Ezra and Zeb just standing there watching the whole thing play out. And Chopper has one baby in one of his retractable arms. And the Hammerhead baby, the Hammerhead baby gets put in the other retractable arm, and he starts spinning him around like he's a baby toy.
Which is really worse than the no car seat in the Inquisitor ship.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Because there isn't a car seat in this than the Phantom either. So, he's just spinning him around as he goes, keeping him entertained. And of course, they're all smiling and happy. And cuts back to the front of the ship, and Ahsoka starts talking to Kanan and goes, "They're Force-sensitive children." And she's like, "I've seen this before during the Clone Wars." And she starts talking about the episode Children of the Force from the Clone Wars, where Dooku and Grievous were taking Force-sensitive children that they had gotten from a stolen holocron, and were taking them to Mustafar to hide them away to try to train them to be Sith warriors. Maybe even some of these Inquisitors were some of those children. We don't know. Which they very well could be. Could be where they got their Inquisitors. But they have, and she relates it to that, and she goes, "But back then the Jedi Order stopped it. But now there's no Jedi Order." And that's when Kanan looks up and looks back at the back and looks at Ahsoka and goes, "Well, that task falls to us now." And of course, you get this big, happy, smiley ending as everybody's flying away, and you think that's where it's going to end. But then it cuts back to our two destroyed TIE fighters and the Inquisitor standing in front of them. And as they're just standing there looking at their destroyed ships, the sister's little probe droid comes and lands in her hand and begins to replay this familiar voice of Ezra Bridger talking about coming to visit them on Gorel.
And I completely forgot about the scene where he where the droid would have recorded that. It was I was expecting us to fade to black on the Phantom there.
Oh, that's what I expect, and I'm sure that's what a lot of people expect.
Yeah, and I think what you have is, we were talking earlier about how there really haven't been any losses. It's, you know, it's another episode where they got away, but to end it on this rather than the happy scene with babies, it's just, it. Stay tuned, it's coming.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't let your guard down, it is coming.
Oh,
which absolutely. Is just fantastic.
Absolutely, because as that message gets replayed and replayed and replayed, the sister smiles and says, "We would love to come visit you on Gorel." And that's when we fade to black, and that ends the episode. Very much a cliffhanger ending, if I don't say so myself.
Absolutely.
Because they leave you ready for everything at that point. You don't know what's going to happen. Are this the Inquisitors coming? Is the entire Empire coming? Who's coming to Gorel? When are they coming to Gorel?
Right.
That's another episode, though. But this is where this one ends, and this ended definitely probably one of the best episodes of the season so far.
For sure.
Absolutely. Overall, now that we've finished talking Future of the Force, what are your final thoughts about this episode?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Baby Hammerhead needs to be a plush toy.
Okay. I can see that happening.
Maybe a Hallmark itty bitty. We could do Snaggletooth. We could do Greedo.
There you go. Hallmark, you're listening. You now have marketing ideas.
You take a look at an image of the Hammerhead baby, and there's it looks like stitching down the front of its face, literally, which is, I'm assuming, is its mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be perfect. It needs to be. Apart from that, yeah, for sure my favorite episode this season. I give it an A for sure. It was just, like I've said all along, it just went, it never slowed down. But not only that, there was concern all the way through. Every time it looked like the heroes were getting out of it, something else was coming up. And it was relentless. And like I said, like we said before, we thought the episode was ending. It's like, no, there's one more little thing we're going to stick to you.
Yeah. One more caveat, yeah.
Yeah, which sort of wraps it back around with how the we mentioned the title card at the beginning didn't play the regular Rebels fanfare. It was that ominous music.
Exactly.
It kind of wraps it all together. There's a quick shot when Ahsoka throws down the sister's saber. And if you take a look at it, it's got really cool design around the ring of the saber rather than the hilt of it. Which is really cool. I also liked that little exchange where the sister was saying Lord Vader will be pleased, and Ahsoka saying, "Well, your master will have to wait." The cool thing about that is you've got neither one of them knowing how much that means what they've said. Ahsoka doesn't know her master. It's for sure. I would say the sister doesn't know Ahsoka's history with Vader. And just two quick little lines. It's like, oh, you have no idea.
Oh, oh yeah, because that's something that's coming. At some point, that has to happen.
Right, right.
Somebody's at some point, you know, because Anakin or Vader knows she's out there.
Right.
At some point, Ahsoka's going to have to make that connection, and it's going to be chilling when she does.
Absolutely.
And you're right. The episode was absolutely incredible. I will admit, when I first saw the preview for it and I realized they were dealing with Force-sensitive children, I was a little nervous because I remember the episodes from the Clone Wars, which were very well done. I was like, it's only the second season. They're already starting to recycle Clone Wars scripts. This just doesn't – ideas from the Clone Wars, it just doesn't – it made me nervous.
Right. Well, even with Ahsoka being the biggest, yeah, the biggest exactly. idea from Clone Wars. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, exactly.
But it's working.
Oh, it did.
For sure.
It did.
Yeah.
And this force child, force sensitive children idea that they did use from Clone Wars and used incorporated into Rebels. They did it in such a different way. It worked extremely well.
Yes.
And they it was played to such an extent that it just it made it it made this battle for Ahsoka possible,
right?
Because Ahsoka had that connection to the Clone Wars from that episode because she was rescuing those babies in the Clone Wars. Now she's doing it again. She has that connection, which made it even so much more personal for her at that point, right. Which made that battle at the end so much better. So absolutely, definitely by far the best episode so far of this season. Absolutely loved it. Overall, I would have to give it definitely an A+, because it kept you going from the moment it began pretty much to the end. It kept you on the edge of your seat. How about you? How would you grade the episode?
An A, for sure, an A. Yeah, it just relentless, and that's what you want from. My wife and I have been watching, well, the whole saga actually, but two nights ago we watched A New Hope. Tonight we actually finished Empire Strikes Back, and it's just like those movies where they just it's one thing after the pacing's amazing, yep. And to cram what they did into 22 minutes, it was just. I come back to that speeder scene.
Oh yeah.
It was just so exciting. And it was only one exciting part out of, geez, I've lost count, five, six in a 22 minute episode. So it was just like just nailed it on every level.
They certainly did. Definitely. We want to hear your thoughts on the episode. Tell us what you thought about, future of the Force, and of course that's the battle, return to combat that Ahsoka had with her sabers at the end, and about the episode in general. If they want to let us know what they thought, how can they get a hold of you, Mike?
Folks can contact me at MikeM@CoffeeWithKenobi.com. You can also check me out on my website, MikeTarkin.com, which is Star Wars in my corner of the galaxy. I talk quite a bit about my Star Wars room, but there's also some little more serious things going on. It's just pretty much where I kind of gather everything Star Wars on the internet for me. You can also find me on Twitter. My Twitter name is Mike Tarkin again. I'm on there quite a bit. Maybe not in the next week before Force Awakens comes out, but that's where I'll be. I'm also a writer for RetroZap.com. And I've been writing a series of articles for them called Special Modifications, where I'm basically just making changes to my collection and letting people know what's up.
Very good. Very good. And, of course, if you want to share your thoughts with me as well, of course, email me at aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. And, of course, both of us blog for Coffee with Kenobi as well. My blogs come out on the 28th. What date does yours come out again, Mike?
9th of the month.
So definitely check out our blogs as well as all the other blogs there on the site. We got some of the best bloggers around sharing their thoughts on Star Wars, from collecting to fandom to everything. They write about everything. So definitely check those out. Check out our other podcasts as well. We got the main show, Coffee with Kenobi, with Dan and Corey host. We have, of course, Legends Library with Randy and Luke. And, of course, we have Comics with Kenobi as well, with Jeff and Matt, which, of course, all great shows. So check them all out. And, of course, check back some of the past Rebels reactions if you've missed some and want to go back and review. They're all there on our website at coffeewithkenobi.com. So definitely check it out. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you, Mike, for joining us and discussing this incredible episode.
Thanks very much for having me. It's great to be able to say I was on a Coffee with Kenobi podcast. So good times.
Well, absolutely. And definitely we'll have to get you back on because there's going to be a lot more Rebels to come, my friend.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Thank you. And of course, thank you again, everybody, for listening. Remember, this is the podcast you are looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here.
If
you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.